Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We welcome the presence this morning of District Judge Paul Meyer of the Northern District of Illinois. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
The first case for argument this morning is K Beer Distributing against Energy Brands. Mr. Weber.
May it please the court, counsel. Good morning. My name is David Weber. I represent a company called K Beer Distributing, Inc. It's a small beverage distributor located just outside De Pere, Wisconsin. This case is on appeal from a decision under Civil Rule Procedure 50 granting judgment as a matter of law at the close of K's case in chief in a jury trial that took place in October of 2009. There's also issues raised from a summary judgment decision that granted judgment to the defendant on the other claims raised by K Beer Distributing, which were not tried. The only issue that was tried to the jury was a breach of contract claim. A jurisdiction exists for this court and the federal district court under diversity in 28 U.S.C. Section 1332. The issues that we've raised for appeal are three. First of all, where the district court found that there was clear extrinsic evidence of the party's intention to only engage in a partial termination, should the contemporaneously executed release have been construed consistent with that intent? Secondly, was there a material issue of fact as to whether K was a dealer under Wisconsin's fair dealership law, which precluded summary judgment? And third, was there sufficient evidence at trial for the court and a reasonable jury to find that there was an enforceable contract? And if not, shouldn't K have been permitted to proceed on alternative theories of promissory estoppel and unjust enrichment?
I just ask you this, because this termination is a big issue in this case. Was the termination specifically discussed during any of the conversations between K and Energy Brand?
Yes, it was, Judge Williams. As the district court found in its summary judgment decision, all of the evidence presented in the summary judgment proceedings suggested that there were discussions and that both parties discussed only terminating K's rights to distribute the brands in the Outagamie County area.
So there was nothing more than that. I know that's what the court found. There was nothing beyond that.
Well, within the summary, that's correct, Your Honor, because we never got into that issue at trial. The court ruled that because the release terminated the entire relationship, we shouldn't introduce any evidence that might tend to argue with that legal conclusion. And so we stayed away from any significant discussion of what the competing evidence might have shown. But as the district court found, the defendant did not even contest the notion that both parties only discussed partially terminating the relationship to the Outagamie area. Starting with the facts of the case, just to go back to a few of the basic facts, taking on a new brand for my client is a risky proposition. They have to evaluate whether the brand has a potential for success, because they know when they take it on and it's not known or worth anything at the time that they are going to be in a losing business for a while. They may make a gross profit on the sale of every bottle of a certain beverage, but they're not going to have a net profit. And they had to, in this case, not only take on a risky brand that nobody knew about, but the evidence shows that Energy Brands asked them to engage in specialized marketing strategies with key accounts that risk their reputation with those key accounts. My client had developed a reputation as being the best distributor in the area to call on these specialized key accounts where higher priced beverages could be sold. And so that's why they came to my client to take on that brand to start in 2002. They gave us pricing guidelines, the defendant did, and at the initial meeting, a contract was actually presented in writing, and that's in the record, the summary judgment record, that by the defendant's own testimony, they presented a form contract, a distributor agreement, to my client to consider during that initial meeting. Now, there's no testimony, nobody at least recalled, that the document was ever actually signed, and no signed document was ever produced in the case. But Both sides testified that Kay did agree to become the distributor sometime after that initial meeting. They considered whether this brand was going to be worthwhile, and after doing so, they came to the conclusion they were going to take the risk on this product and begin to sell it. So they called Energy Brands and accepted the agreement, and both sides are in agreement with those facts.
And then, but this was to go on as long as Kay used its best efforts to do so in terms of the distribution.
Correct, Your Honor. There was a test for that, and there's an industry test for that. This was industry experience. Not only was there a test in terms of their efforts to reasonably increase sales and distribution levels, but Kay was going to have to report their sales and distribution levels. They were familiar. They've got a number of different brands, obviously, that they distribute, and it's common for the grantors or the suppliers of these products to evaluate their performance, and when they're not performing, to challenge them for their lack of good cause or for good cause on failure to perform. And so Kay understood that they were going to be judged by their performance and that they had to put in their best efforts. So long as they didn't just take this brand on and put it in the back shelf and keep other distributors in the area from taking it on or neglect the brand, as long as they continue to work to continue to increase this brand and get it into those key accounts, they're going to be allowed to keep this brand. That was the oral agreement, and everybody talked about that at the initial meeting.
One of the arguments that's been made in this case is that that agreement is unenforceable given the statute of frauds, and I hope you will be addressing that. As it's certainly worth more than $500, and given your argument about the meaning of the Wisconsin distribution law, it's an agreement for more than 1 year. Indeed, on your understanding, it's an agreement forever.
Well, Your Honor, there's actually several Wisconsin cases on this point, and I believe that the Nelson case, and then there's a Eastern District of Wisconsin case, which both hold that an agreement of this sort is enforceable because it can be terminated under a year's time. Because if Kay, for example, had taken on this brand and determined that this brand was not worth putting its best efforts into, was not going to go out there and sell this brand to its key accounts, Energy Brands could have come back to Kay within a month, 2 months, conceivably 6 months or 11 months, and said,
Nelson case, where is this cited in your briefs?
Well, in our reply brief, Your Honor, we addressed the
table of authorities in your reply brief, and I can't see it, so what am I missing?
I'm looking at my reply brief, Your Honor, and I...
That may have been one of the cases cited by the district court. I'm not sure. I recall a line of cases that the court cited with respect to this issue.
And Your Honor, I do believe we cited it in the... The Metropolitan Liquor case is cited in our... And I believe that is the Eastern District of Wisconsin case I was referencing. That's cited at page 27 of our opening brief. And as far as the Nelson case, I know I have it cited in here, and I'm not sure why it's not in the... table of authorities.
It's at footnote 5. The Nelson versus Farmer.
Thank you.
Page 28.
Page 28. And that is the case I was referencing. I regret that wasn't in our table of authorities.
The comment about best efforts is a reference to, as I understand it, a reference to custom and practice of dealerships or distributors. I do have a question about that. Assuming that you're right that the party's expectation and understanding and contractual relationship was that K Beer continued while it exerts its best efforts, I understand your position that good cause would be a reason for the termination, correct?
Yes.
What would be the effect of the sale of the brand, which is what happened here? Is it your position that the custom and practice in a situation like that would be that the distributorship continues in spite of the sale?
Well, in this case, it was a stock sale. The company Energy Brand still exists. The transaction didn't actually legally affect the contract of Energy Brands with its distributors.
So it's your position that KBR should still be a distributor that county?
We were terminated, so I would suggest that we should have damages for the breach of the contract, and that should be the fair expectation of the parties, which at trial we introduced evidence from our expert that would forecast the profits that our company lost for a number of years after the termination. And that is supported by various authorities in Wisconsin regarding both breach of contract and a similar type of measure of damages for the dealership claim. With respect to Judge Easterbrook's question about the statute of frauds, and I can get into this in more detail later, but with regard to the UCC, we have several arguments on that as well. Number one, even if this distributor agreement should be interpreted as a contract that's governed by the UCC, which we would disagree with because we distinguish between the obligation to distribute and promote a brand versus the separate contracts to purchase goods that are entered into under that distributor agreement. Certainly, we've set forth in our reply brief a number of arguments, not only reasonable reliance, detrimental reliance, the fact that there actually was a written document at the time of the initial meeting, and there's various other defenses to the statute of frauds UCC argument that we've set forth there, which I can go into more detail if the court would like. Getting back to the notion of the release, it's very important that in late 2004 and 2005, from a factual standpoint, Energy Brands engaged in negotiations that did not include my client. They entered into negotiations with a company we've collectively referred to as Cadbury in this case. It actually involves several defendants, but our clients knew them as Cadbury. And they entered into a contract, the two of those companies, which involved a portion, a limited territory in Wisconsin. After entering into that side agreement, Energy Brands approached Kay and told them about this agreement. And they said, we have entered into an agreement with a new distributor that has distributors in some parts of the country, across the country, and in those areas, we're going to have to give Cadbury the rights. So we're going to have to terminate you in those areas. From here on out, where Cadbury's trucks go, you must not be able to sell the product. We knew where Cadbury's trucks were going in this area. We referred to it as the Outagamie County territory. They agreed to pay us a termination fee as a result of that partial termination. It is important in this case that there was no contract with Cadbury for the entire state of Wisconsin. And I'm referencing the actual contract between those parties that we never were party to, and that was at Record 48-5, and it actually shows a map. That's one of the problems that we have with the release as well, because after this discussion took place, the parties did enter into a release contract. It doesn't mention territory in the entire agreement. It doesn't include a map. It does reference the fact that there's going to be a termination of the distribution relationship, but it includes a figure, $8,500, which roughly matches the gross profits that Kay had developed over 1 year's time and the territory was giving up. We produced a report that was time-stamp dated before the parties entered into this written contract and release, which shows each of our accounts in that territory that we gave up. So this was strong evidence from the district court's perspective that the parties both clearly intended only a partial termination in terms of partial territory. There was no discussion of territory in the release. The defense argues that's because they now think that the entire territory was supposed to be terminated. Our submission to the court is that was an after-the-fact revisionist explanation of what that agreement was intended to mean. If indeed it wasn't, and that was Energy Brand's purpose at the time, then that was a contract that was either entered into by fraud because they directly only talked to us about partial termination. That was the only subject that we were talking about at the time, and they also paid us directly related to the sale of product in that partial territory.
That was information they had when they wrote the check? the information about the lost profits for a year in Outagamie County.
That's right. The check's actually dated in April of 2005. The first document that we have is March 10, 2005. That's a report that our client generated showing each of these accounts in the territory that we were giving up because, again, they had called us and said, we're going to have to give up a territory in the Outagamie area. And so what's going to be the termination fee? We negotiated it. We agreed on one times gross profit. We printed a report showing each of those accounts, and it's dated March 10th. Thereafter, they send us a proposed release to document the agreement. Our client signs the release, believing entirely at the time that they were only terminating that part of the territory which the parties had discussed, which we had drafted a report to show exactly what our sales were, and we received a check in April of 2005, several weeks after returning the signed agreement, for that amount.
Counsel, your time has expired, but I have one final question to ask of you. I take it that it's agreed that after the 2005 release, your client was a sub-distributor of Cadbury. Is that right?
Your Honor, that is correct, although...
Okay. Now, what does Wisconsin law provide when a sub-distributor's distributor itself loses the right to the product?
Well, I would argue, Your Honor, that we were a sub-distributor.
I'm not asking what you would argue. I'm asking what Wisconsin law provides for that situation.
There's no distinction between a distributor and a sub-distributor under Wisconsin law.
No. Look, this is a question about the Wisconsin Fair Dealership Law, right? A is a distributor of B, and then A resells to C. Your client is C. A loses his right to the product from B, a mutually satisfactory transaction. So it's now impossible for A to supply the product to C. Does Wisconsin law make A liable under those circumstances? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
The difficulty I'm having, Your Honor, is that we could have been called a sub-distributor under the way I first answered that question, yes.
Forget the term sub-distributor. Just deal with my question. Right? This has got to be a common situation in which one firm sells to a second, which sells to a third, and then the second in the chain loses the right to the product. What are the rights of number three against number two? That's my question.
I believe that that there would be no rights. Our position was that we always had a direct relationship with Energy Brands. We never lost that direct relationship, even though...
Why is Cadbury a defendant in this case?
Because of the unjust... The reason why they're on appeal, Your Honor, is because we're arguing that they were paid for our territory after 2005, even though they had no right. That was an unjust enrichment that they received.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I did not see the white light, Your Honor. I apologize.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Mr. Weber. I think the answer to your question, Judge Easterbrook, is that the Bong versus Cerny case under the Wisconsin Fair Dealership Law suggests that...
Which case is this?
Bong versus Cerny, C-E-R-N-Y. It is in our table of authorities. 158 Wis...
That'll make it easier for me to find.
158 Wis Second 474. And we believe that the result under the Wisconsin Fair Dealership Law would not differ from a contract case where the intervening distributor loses its rights from the supplier, and as a result, the sub-distributor no longer has access to the product. There is no claim against the ultimate supplier. We believe that Bong stands for that proposition. And it's important to understand, I think, that we have on this issue a limited record, and sometimes things get confusing in this case because we have a trial record as to the oral contract that occurred after the release, and we have a summary judgment record relating to the matters that were presented and are appealed from the summary judgment order. The actual facts are that it is undisputed that after the execution of the release, the only purchases of the vitamin water products that occurred from Cadbury. In the remaining part of the territory in which KBIR operated as a sub-distributor. Cadbury, it is undisputed, delivered the products itself in the part of the territory that KBIR no longer was able to distribute the Vitamin Water products after the release in 2005. So there is a very logical construction of this release in that the entirety of the distribution relationship between Energy Brands and KBIR was being terminated, and that as to the remaining part of the territory, KBIR was acting as a sub-distributor for Cadbury. So it is an entirely logical construction that the amount of the compensation would be paid for the territory that they could no longer operate in at all, but yet the release would say that the entirety of the relationship and any promises, any claims, any contracts of whatsoever nature as between KBIR and Energy Brands were terminated.
Post the release, KBIR had limited distribution rights?
Yes.
By virtue of what agreement?
By virtue of the fact that it is undisputed that they reduced their territory by virtue of the agreement made between Perez and Terry Shrove that they would restrict the so-called Outagamie territory would no longer be part of what the area in which KBIR could distribute the products, even as a sub-distributor, because that's where Cadbury ran its trucks. But as to the remaining part, they would act as a sub-distributor, and they no longer bought products from Energy Brands. Energy Brands, as would not be unusual for an ultimate supplier, still had some involvement in the sale of the products on an ongoing basis, and did, as Mr. Weber suggests, the summary judgment facts suggest, there was some policing of territories, and they did talk about promotions. So I don't mean to suggest that the Energy Brands representatives who would normally be in the territory did nothing. But from and after that date of the release, the only aspect was that KBIR purchased its products from Cadbury and was, in effect, a sub-distributor.
And why exactly did Energy Brands mediate the disputes between KBIR and Cadbury?
Because we don't want two wholesalers, whether it's Cadbury and KBIR, or KBIR and XYZ Corporation, attempting to sell products to the same retailers. This is ultimately a four-tier system because the products are sold to retailers, being convenience stores, gas stations, and grocery stores, who resell them to the public. And an orderly distribution system normally has a single wholesaler of the product selling to the retailers in that area. So that's the reason why a supplier would attempt to mediate any conflicts in the event of ambiguities and boundaries of territories or what have you. And occasionally, an avaricious wholesaler might go in and try to sell 1,000 cases to a grocery store outside their territory. So there's a very solid reason why the supplier would want to police the territory, even if that territory was being served by a distributor and a sub-distributor, the distributor being Cadbury and the sub-distributor being KBIR. Now, I'd like to spend just a minute jumping ahead to the UCC question that was addressed by Judge Easterbrook, in that under the record as it sits, unless this court finds reason to send the case back on the basis of the district judge's ruling for the release, some new contract in KBIR's version of the facts was created by a conversation, a single conversation, that occurred post-release. And the trial court at the trial clearly noted that the testimony of the single witness from KBIR that talked about the making of that 2005 oral contract, Terry Shrove, had conflated several conversations, and it was only after I probed him on cross-examination that he revealed there was a single post-release conversation, only one, and that consisted of a very brief comment that I will quote it to you. So is your recollection now, as you sit here today, that when Mr. Gantt came to you, you called Mr. Perez and had that conversation, and in that conversation he said, the words to you. You have to order from Cadbury or 7-Up. Answer yes. Question, but nothing else would change. Answer, nothing else would change in the relationship between Glasso and K, nor did it. Glasso being the other term for vitamin water and energy brands. That was the sole matter that he could recall about that conversation. So we have an oral conversation for what has to be the sale of goods, because that's all that conversation can deal with, is the purchase and sale of goods by K Beer from Cadbury. And that oral contract...
I've got hold of and read a copy of Nelson, and it has nothing to do with the UCC. Indeed, it's a pre-UCC case.
Yes, sir.
And has nothing to do with the Dealership Act. So I wonder whether, in your view, there's any Wisconsin authority dealing with the application of the UCC to this kind of arrangement.
There is no state case, but in the case of American Suzuki Motor, which we cited from the Seventh Circuit, interpreting Wisconsin law, they
really interested in state law. We play the role of ventriloquist dummy occasionally. Some people emphasize the word ventriloquist, some emphasize the word dummy. But I'm more interested in state law. If there's nothing in Wisconsin, how about all highest courts of other states interpreting this part of the UCC?
Yes, sir. I have searched high and low for Wisconsin law, and it has not been decided. But with only one or two exceptions, some 20 or 30 states have interpreted distribution and franchise contracts to be governed by the UCC. I did not put them all in because I felt as some of those cases were collected by the American Suzuki case as it existed at the time. That was a 1995 case, and there have been several since. So there are a few outliers, most notably, I think, Missouri, I'm quoting from memory. But I think it is almost uniform that distribution of franchise contracts can involve or do are governed by the UCC under the predominant purpose test. And as to any one distribution or franchise relationship, the argument may be stronger that there were services involved. But here, we can't possibly argue that there were services involved because the contract is formed only and precisely by the oral conversation that followed the release in 2005. And that had nothing to do with services. It had nothing to do with the specifics of anything other than their right to buy and sell. So while there are cases such as the Minetti Anchor Hocking case, quoted by my friend Mr. Weber, that one was the sale of an entire business. So there were hard assets and other matters involved, as well as the ability to distribute the products. If then it is governed by the UCC, if the agreement is governed by the UCC, it's certainly for more than $500, because the damages they seek are the lost profits on the future sales, and we've said that was approaching $1 million in their experts' report, as Mr. Weber has referred to this morning. The only way that Mr. Weber says that it satisfies the statute of frauds are the exceptions in 402.201, and there's only one of those, sub C, that he says applies, and that is with respect to goods for which payment has been made and accepted, or which have been received and accepted. And what he says is we did part performance, so that takes it out of the statute of frauds. But the context of part performance in a non-UCC statute of frauds and the context of part performance as embodied in sub C of the exceptions to the statute of fraud in the UCC are entirely different. The framers of the UCC said, yes, you have a contract, but only to the extent of the amount of the goods that were sold and delivered. Part performance of a distribution relationship going forward does not take it out of the statute of frauds beyond that point. I do want to talk one thing about the misrepresentation argument that the counsel has referred to in trying to take the release out of the out of play, suggesting that there was a misrepresentation made by Mr. Perez when he was discussing matters with Mr. Schroth. And I would invite the court's attention to the fact that there is a very limited scheme of facts that deal with this conversation in Mr. Schroth's affidavit, and it wasn't made a part of the appendix. But what they're suggesting is the misrepresentation argued both below and here, is that there was a misrepresentation as to the contents of the release, not as to a misrepresentation that justified the deal or that caused the deal, but as to the contents of the release. And they cite for that a fax cover sheet that wasn't attached to Mr. Schroth's declaration, but was characterized by him. The fact is that I don't know why they didn't attach it. I think they didn't have it at the time. But we know that it was introduced at trial as an exhibit, both fax sheets. And it says nothing like what they say. So I find it curious that he can argue that as grounds to, for causing the reversal of the court's reconsideration of summary judgment on the release, there was a representation made in the fax cover sheet that it would embody the discussions that Mr. Schroth and Mr. Perez had. But at the same time, we now know that the fax cover sheet says nothing like that. All it says is, here's the release, sign it and send it back. And the second cover sheet says, oh, by the way, send it to this address. So it would be odd to be able to say, have a witness say the light was green on summary judgment, and then you know that the light was red from evidence at trial, and yet you can still argue the former as the basis. Thank you very much. Oh, wait a minute. I have a little extra time. I thought I saw out of the corner of my eye.
There's no legal obligation to use all the time.
No, and I think I will, unless in the absence of further questions from the court, I think I'll just waive the rest of my time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.